Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen.
And we welcome you to
Love Letters Live. And this is a show, obviously, about love letters, and love letters in all their various forms and what they can be. This is a show about gratitude, about memories, and about love. And it's about gratitude and memories and love shared, that is to say, expressed, written down, stamped, and mailed to someone. Because a love letter, if you don't mail it, isn't really a letter, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd like to change the world one letter at a time and share the love and share the memories and share the strength and spread it around.
Right.
So I'm going to start right in with our guest, Stacey Pilevsky, who is a new resident to San Francisco, which is our good luck. She is a journalist and has been for a long time, as young as she is. And she is now a staff writer for the Weekly J. And as I say, she's fairly new to San Francisco. And has
wait
a story.
Wait a second, Janet.
I'm sorry.
People don't know what the Weekly J is.
Oh, the Weekly J is the
Jewish News Weekly of Northern California,
formerly
the Jewish Bulletin.
Thank you. And so we're going to start right in and talk to Stacey, who has a wonderful, wonderful history. When I say wonderful, it's difficult and has ended up in something beautiful. So let me just go right to you, Stacey. Talk about challenges and history and joys and changes in your family.
So I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and with my mom, my dad, and my younger sister. And my mom's mom, my grandma Sandra, was a Holocaust survivor. She was born in a small village in what's present-day Slovak Republic, what was then Czechoslovakia, near the Hungarian border. And I believe in 1944, the Nazis came to her village, and or maybe in 43, but 43 or 44, the Nazis came and took her whole family to a Jewish ghetto. I'm not sure which one. And shortly thereafter, they were sent to Birkenau, yeah.
Oh.
They were sent to Auschwitz-Birkenau. Mm-hmm. And her parents died in the Holocaust. I don't know all the details of when she last saw them and such, but she had a large family, and her brother and sister survived.
How?
I don't know exactly how. I do know later on, I guess I've pieced together a little bit of their history as time goes on. My grandma didn't talk about it very often.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that her niece, a couple of her nieces also survived, and her sister survived, and her sister wasn't in as good of health as my grandma was during the Holocaust, and so I guess my grandma did double the work so that the Nazis wouldn't know that my great-aunt Charlotte wasn't well.
Capable of doing it.
Right, and so her brother, my Uncle Lou, and then, so Sandra and Charlotte stayed together during the Holocaust, Lou got separated. And after the war, when the camps were liberated, my grandma and her sister went to Prague. And there they heard, or maybe they didn't go to Prague. They went, I don't exactly remember where they
That's
went.
Okay.
But they went somewhere in Hungary or Czechoslovakia. And my Aunt Charlotte found out, someone said, I saw your brother. He's in Prague.
Oh, my.
So Charlotte went to Prague without my sister, or without her sister, and said, I'll let you know.
That's nice that you're so connected with your family that you say my sister.
I'll let you know if I find him. Mm-hmm. And so Charlotte went to Prague, found my great-uncle Lou, and went back for my grandma Sandra. And they lived in Prague for 2 years. And then came to America. They came first to New York.
Oh, that's what I was wondering.
And then Pittsburgh. Yeah. In New York City, my grandma worked for a button factory.
Mm-hmm.
And in Pittsburgh, where she
Your grandma Sandra.
My grandma Sandra. And then she moved to Pittsburgh, met my grandpa, Eugene, who was not a Holocaust survivor. He came to America before the war. He was a grocer. My grandma ended up she was a seamstress. She was a very talented seamstress and worked out of her home. And
We're going to get back to that seamstress part later, aren't we?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
So, and my grandma actually, when she lived in Prague after the war, I studied abroad in Prague in college, and my mom gave me the address of where my grandma and her sister and brother lived, and it turned out that it was 2 blocks from my dorm in Prague, which is right near the castle.
Excuse me, when were you made aware of that?
That she lived in Prague?
No, that you were 2 doors away.
Oh, well, it was weird. I lived in Prague for total 4 months, and when I had been there for about 2 months, and I knew the city, I finally knew the city, I thought, okay, now might be a good time to walk around and try to find where my grandma lived. And one day, I was just randomly walking around, walking back from class, and I looked up, and the street sign was Bielohorska, which was her street. And I found the flat where she lived, and it was happened to be two blocks from my dorm. It was strange and yes. a coincidence, but
maybe yes, maybe yes, maybe no for yeah. those things. But so now, getting back to your life with your grandmother, how did she fit into your life growing up?
So I grew up in Cleveland,
and this is Grandma Sandra.
Grandma Sandra.
What about Aunt Charlotte? Where did she?
Aunt Charlotte moved to California.
Oh.
Well before I can remember. Well, she moved to California when I was in probably middle school or elementary school.
But did she have a family?
She moved to be close to her children who had moved to California.
Okay.
Sandra stayed in Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. and I grew up in Cleveland, 2 hours away from Pittsburgh. So I saw my grandma a lot when I was young. We went to Pittsburgh all the time, and her and my grandpa would occasionally take a Greyhound bus to visit us in Cleveland.
What did you call them? What did you call your grandma?
Grandma and grandpa. Uh-huh. We didn't call them Bubby and Zadie, which is the Yiddish term for grandma and grandpa. But they would visit us a lot. We would visit them a lot. And when I was younger, I wasn't old enough or mature enough to really have a lot of questions about the Holocaust.
Right.
And when I got older, I saw her a lot less, but I got a lot more curious. And because I saw her less, I was not as comfortable to ask. And she actually passed away a few years ago.
Well, let me ask you something. Now, a lot of this must have translated or filtered down to your mother information.
Well, it's interesting because once my grandma passed away, and ironically she died when I was in Prague, about just 3 or 4 weeks after I visited Auschwitz, she passed away. So I felt sort of like I never really got to ask her everything I wanted to know, and I also never really got to, I never really understood how amazing it is that she survived and moved to the United States and made a life for herself. I didn't get that.
Right. You just saw her as your grandma who had a life here.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So my mom, I guess my grandma talked to my mom a lot about the Holocaust, but my mom didn't talk to me very much about
it. Your mother was born here?
My mom was born in the States. Okay. She was born in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
So once my grandma died, I started asking my mom a lot more questions, and then I learned a lot more. And I also learned an interesting thing about how they... not how they escaped, but so when the Nazis came and made them move away from their village, my Aunt Charlotte was really hopeful that they would come back, but she wasn't sure. So she collected all the women in the family, she collected all of their jewelry and put it, she dug a hole into like a brick in their home and she put it away in a wall, and she covered it up with cement or something so nobody would know. And after the war, when she went back, it was still there.
My goodness.
My mom did not know this until after my grandma had already died.
Who told her?
Aunt Charlotte. About a year after my grandma died, we went to visit Aunt Charlotte in San Diego. She told my mom the story, and then she said, I want you to have this. And it was her grandmother, my great-grandmother's wedding ring. And my great-grandmother died in the Holocaust. My mom didn't even know this wedding ring existed. And my Aunt Charlotte saved it, and she didn't have daughters, so she gave it to my mom. And that was a really emotional exchange.
What was your mother's reaction to that?
Oh, she cried.
I would imagine.
Really shocked and moved. And because she never met her grandma.
Right.
And so I think for that reason it was important for her to let me get to know her mother, my grandma.
Yes.
Because she never had that experience.
Oh, for what she had to go without.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your grandmother like with you? I mean, what did she share with you? What did she do? Did you cook together?
You said
she was a seamstress.
It's interesting because so my grandfather died when I was in sixth grade, and that was a very, very, very hard and traumatic thing for her. And shortly thereafter, she had to move from her home into an apartment and then into assisted living facility. So for most of the life that I remember, like middle school, high school, college, she did not cook as much. But I absolutely have very vivid memories of her making amazing matzo ball soup and kugels, very traditional Eastern European Jewish food.
Uh-huh.
She used to make, she always used to make jello with a little bit of lemon. She'd mix like strawberry jello with lemon jello, and it was like special jello. And my sister and I always requested it. And she used to serve matzo ball soup in these shallow soup bowls, and she would always serve it in the kitchen and bring it into the dining room when she lived in her home. And my mom would always help carry it out, and we'd have to be very careful to not
slop it over the end.
Yeah, it would swish
roll
around the bowl,
right.
Spill the broth.
Yeah.
She was an amazing cook, and she was very talented in the domestic arts, and she made a living out of it.
I'm just curious about something. I'm watching your face. It's just like electric light in your eyes and your smile and everything. So you've clearly been left with some beautiful visual memories. I mean, you're balancing your hands when you're talking about carrying the bowls of matzo ball soup out. Have you written this down?
No. Okay. I have written, I did write a story about her matzo ball soup and the fact that, you know, even until she was very old, she used to save everything. Like not just, I mean, she would save scraps of fabric, scraps of thread, buttons, Velcro, zippers. When she passed away and they went through all of her things. My mom ended up giving me like a bag of old zippers, a lot of her old sewing supplies, because I do sew. I'm nowhere near as talented as my grandma.
But do you think that's a genetic talent?
Yeah, I think it skipped a generation because my mom doesn't like to sew, and I really like it. And part of why I like it is for that reason, I feel like it's a way to keep her spirit alive.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a button box with all kinds of?
I don't have a lot of buttons. I have a ton of thread. I have a lot of my grandma's old thread.
Oh, good.
A lot of it, like in every color.
Different quality, I guess. From what they make today, like cotton.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and because of that, the natural stuff and not the synthetic, it's not aged well. Sometimes I can't use it. Yeah.
But the spools are nice wood. Uh-huh. They're not the plastic thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can still remember my grandma's house and bathrooms, and she made duvet covers for all of her down comforters, and the down comforters were always really old, but she didn't ever throw anything away. Like everything, which I interpreted to be just a holdover from the Holocaust, you know, she saved everything. She would save scraps of bread, half-eaten hard candies. Like we'd find them in her purse and, you know, wrapped in a napkin or the candy wrapper, and, she would have these old down comforters that were really lumpy, but of course she didn't want to get rid of them, and she'd make duvet covers for them, and you know that's what we slept with when we went to visit her in Pittsburgh.
Did you know they were old and lumpy, or did you just take it as normal life?
I mean, I figured they were old and lumpy because I figured they were old because they were lumpy.
Right.
But of course she saved everything, and that was part of the reason why it was growing old. Was very hard for her because she had to downsize, and her stuff was important to her because
because sure you keep all that stuff for emotional reasons, so downsizing
it was very very
like getting rid of half of yourself.
So I still have a lot of her old sewing supplies. I have these huge sewing shears or fabric shears that don't really cut anything. They need to be sharpened, but they're humongous, and I can't bring myself to part with them.
Why don't you just get them sharpened?
I could do that. And I have a new pair of scissors I use. My grandma was a little bit abrasive, and when I was young, I remember when I was really young, not that I was scared of her, but... I think that was just that Eastern European quality. You know, she was all of her relative, all of her sister, her cousins.
She could be harsh, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, they're all the women in the family are like that. They just have this slight abrasive quality, which I think is probably for what they went through and also just a different culture growing up in Eastern Europe.
Yes.
So,
and that had to be a harsher life. I mean, when you talk about saving all these things, and it wasn't really necessarily from the Holocaust, but just from living that difficult life. Why would you throw away a half a loaf of bread if you didn't know you could get another one?
Right. And I think that I would imagine that if you lived through that for even, I mean, she was in the camps for about a little more than a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has to, I mean, how could that not stay with you for your whole life?
Oh, of course. Of course. What a picture of her.
She was short. She let her hair grow white. She didn't color it. But she loved to get it styled, so probably like once a week she would go to the salon for as long as I can remember. And she always, when she would go out, she would always put makeup on, a lot of rouge. She would wear like a lot of blush and like bright fuchsia lipstick that would sometimes get on her teeth. And she had dentures, so... And she had her ears pierced when she was a baby, so she would wear earrings. And because she was old, you know, in her 80s, she had like visible holes.
Yeah.
And my sister and I always loved to like pull at her ear holes because you could see holes.
Yes,
of course. We thought it was interesting when we were kids.
Yeah. Well, so I like that, the visuals. I mean, you're just in general a visual person.
Yeah, I think so. And her home and her being, like her aura, I guess, was just very colorful. She was just a very colorful, boisterous woman.
Now, where does this, you once mentioned this mint green Singer sewing machine with the treadle, this old one. Tell us about that. Well, that's like that movie, The Yellow Rolls Royce, like a whole...
She had three sewing machines at one point. She ended up giving one to my mom, which was in, growing up was in our basement. That's what I sewed on when I was in high school. I used to make purses, and when I was in my hippie phase, I used to put inserts into my jeans to make them big bell bottoms.
Yeah.
But she had two sewing machines. One was like a black Singer, one was a mint green Singer. And then when she had to move into an apartment, she ended up giving, she kept the mint green Singer and she sold the black one. And so when she died, I got an email from my aunt saying, you know, we've gone through all of her things. We've gotten rid of some things, kept some things, and we wanted to know if you might want her sewing machine. Knowing that I was in college and I was moving around a lot and I was certainly not settled, and it was the kind of sewing machine, it's very, very heavy and it's built into a table. So it's not the kind of thing you can just put in the backseat of your car.
Right.
So right now it's in our basement in Cleveland, and whenever I do get settled, it will definitely come live with me.
Oh, wonderful.
And it was the kind, it's kind of old sewing machine that has the, it doesn't have a foot pedal, it has a knee pedal that you push on it.
Yeah, it's the old treadle.
For anyone who sews, you'll know that that's very authentic and old and really fun to work with.
You probably have the antique dealers coming after you once the show airs. So do you want to...
Oh, sure. Just to remind our listeners that this is KUSF 90.3 FM, Love Letters Live. We're here every week at this time and hope that you'll listen in.
Thank you. Okay, so my question to you, since this is about love letters, is who gets your love letter today?
Well, my grandma's no longer living. She died in 2001.
No reason she can't get one.
Or 2002.
No reason you can't write one.
Yeah, she died in 2002. But I want to send it to my mom.
Yes.
Her daughter, her oldest daughter, only daughter. My mom still gets very emotional when she talks about my grandma. And I think it's just because it's hard for her. She misses her. I mean, when my grandpa died, it was obviously, I'm sure, very sad and traumatic. I don't remember it as much. I was younger. I was like 11. But I remember when my grandma died, my mom told me that she felt like an orphan. You know, her parents were gone. And so I have a lot of questions about my grandma because I think as you get older and you see the world differently than when you're a child.
Yes, of course.
So I force my mom to talk about my grandma, even if it's hard for her, even if I can tell it's making her sad, because I want to keep her alive. I don't want to forget her, and I think the only way to do that is to talk about her. So I do want to send this to my mom because I think she's someone who loves, loves, loves my grandma, her mother, and respects her a lot. So I think it'll mean a lot to her.
Okay, I have a question just in terms of the art of writing love letters and the many ways they can go. I've just written down some things for you that I'm going to give to you that you said about your grandmother. And the way you said them, I can't imagine that you forget them by the time you sit down to write a letter. But you just said something interesting, which was you want to know more about your grandma, even now that you're older. And you couple that with it's emotional for your mother to talk about her. It's hard, and you have to kind of force it sometimes. I think the beauty of a love letter, ostensibly, dear grandma, you get to ask your grandma all the questions you want to know about her. In addition to all the things, you could have like a two-part. Here's what I remember and what I will always treasure and carry with me. Here's what I want to know so I can carry it with me always. And then you get to ask all those questions. And then you get to send it to your mother so she doesn't have to be faced with your asking them and be called upon to answer them right away when she may be choking down tears. Maybe it would be a wonderful opportunity for her to see what you want to know and then quietly sit herself and give you answers when she's a little more distant from the conversation.
That's a good idea.
What is that?
That's a great idea.
Do you want to do it like that?
Sure.
Okay. So I've written down the things you said about your grandmother. What are the things that you want to say to your grandmother that you never got a chance to?
Well, I never got to tell her how... I mean, she was such a strong woman. And that is something that I never got to tell her, like, how much I admire her. Because I didn't know how much I admired her until really I went to Auschwitz, until I saw it with my own eyes and realized what she lived through, and also thought of, and because I was in a foreign land where Prague is not like Paris, where everybody, I mean, when I was there in 2002, it wasn't like everybody spoke English. A lot of people did, but a lot of people didn't, and that was the first time in my life that I was living in a foreign country. And it made me realize, my God, my grandma not only survived the Holocaust, moved to Prague, where they spoke Czech and not Hungarian, mm-hmm. which she grew up with, and then moved to America, not knowing English. She didn't have a high school diploma. She wasn't an educated woman. She's a very, you know, smart, mm-hmm. People-smart woman. Moved to a foreign country and built a life for herself, mm-hmm. had children. And, I mean, her children, for my grandma and grandpa, neither of them have high school diplomas, and both of their children, my mom and my uncle, mm-hmm. have master's degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure, giving your children what you didn't get.
Yeah.
So what other things would you like to be able to tell her? Because this will be a way of your telling your mother how much.
I also, my grandma was she was warm in a very un-American way. I think we have a tendency in this country to equate warmth with bubbliness.
Uh-huh.
And my grandma wasn't really a bubbly person, but she was so kind and caring. She was always thinking about how much my sister and I were eating. Were we eating enough? Were our pants long enough? Were they too long? Did they drag on the ground? Would we trip? Right. She always wanted to shorten our pants. She always wanted to feed us.
Oh, that hippie long thing must have driven her nuts.
There's a really old home video. It's so funny. My grandma always thought that the video camera was a still camera. So in almost all the videos we have of her, at the first minute she's on film, she's just standing there smiling.
Uh-huh.
And then my dad reminds her every time, Mom, it's a video camera, you can move. And there's a really funny old home video. I think I was probably five, and my sister was, I was five or six, my sister was probably three. And my dad is asking my grandma what we did that day. This is in Cleveland. She had come for a visit. And my grandma and grandpa had taken my sister and I out shopping to the mall and out to lunch and I think to the zoo. And she comments, she told the camera, we were hugging and she patted my tush. And she said, ugh, they hardly ate anything.
Uh-huh.
They hardly ate. You know, I worry about them.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, she always wanted to feed us something. And to her, I think food was love.
Sure.
And
well, it is a way of keeping those you love alive.
Yeah. And I think that she was just a really remarkable woman, and I hope that she knew that. I hope that she did, but I didn't really ever spell it out. I never really said, you know, Grandma, you are amazing. And she was just amazing.
What are the questions you want to ask her?
I don't know. I'd like to know things. I think that,
like what?
Well, I think that when you're a child, a grandmother is a grandmother, the
uh-huh.
same way a teacher is a teacher, and you can't imagine a teacher having a life outside the classroom. You run
oh,
into
yes.
a teacher at the mall.
Shocking.
Oh, my God, you don't live at your desk?
Uh-huh. Or under it. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think that in that same way when I was a child, my grandma was my grandma, and that was it.
Of course, of course.
And I wish that I had the curiosity when she was alive to ask her about when she was a teenager, what that was like, what it was like growing up in a small village, you know, what it was like growing up Orthodox, what it was like.
I want to know what her first kiss was like.
Yeah, uh-huh. And what it was like when the Nazis came. Was she scared? Was she nervous? Was she optimistic? How did she know? I mean, what did she know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why did she, what it was like to be in the ghetto? I also have recently learned a lot more about ghetto life
mm-hmm.
and that, you know, I learned a little bit about the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising and various
mm-hmm.
other forms of resistance.
You want to know if she took part?
Yeah, I'd love to know if she did that
mm-hmm.
and how she kept faith.
Ugh.
Did she believe in God when she was in the camps? And
uh-huh.
And if not, how did she get it back? Because she and my grandpa raised my parent or my mom and my uncle going to an Orthodox synagogue.
Mm-hmm.
My grandpa went to shul every Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
My grandma did not, but you know, they kept the Sabbath, and
mm-hmm.
I would like to know why, you know, after that,
mm-hmm.
why did she want to stay close to a Jewish community? I think a lot of people did, but sometimes I wonder, you know, if I was in her shoes,
mm-hmm.
would I, you know, say, screw God, I don't,
mm-hmm.
you know, how could God let this happen in the world?
Right.
And she obviously maintained her faith. And I don't know, I know that my Grandpa and Grandma met at a wedding, like
mm-hmm.
through friends, but I don't exactly know what their courtship was like or
mm-hmm.
how my grandpa proposed.
Would your mother know of any of this?
She might, and
yeah.
I just never
yeah.
asked.
You
I guess.
Haven't put it out there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'd also love to know how my grandma learned to sew. I mean, someone must have taught her. I mean, she might be self-taught. She would make pea coats and suits and amazing skirts. I mean, she made half of her wardrobe and my mother's.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she made things that looked like you would go to Dillard's or Macy's and purchase them.
Perfect finished products.
Perfect. And yeah. I don't have the precision to be a seamstress like she was, but she did. And so I'd love to know how she learned and why she, I never really even knew like why she loved it. I think people who have a hobby, and for her it wasn't just a hobby, it was almost like a way of life. Mm-hmm. There's a reason they do it beyond, I'm making money, I'm, shortening people's pants and
maybe it was a way to satisfy some inner sense of perfection, which she certainly didn't have in her.
But in Pittsburgh, the basement was her domain.
Yeah.
The entire basement was filled with piles of fabric and baskets of buttons, and I wasn't allowed to walk barefoot down. We had to put shoes on to go down into the basement because there were pins and needles all over the basement floor. Because it was her domain, so she could be as messy as she wanted. And she was the kind of woman, and I do this. She bought fabric as she found it, not as she had projects. So
yeah.
I kind of inherited that. I just, I forget I buy fabric and piles up.
Yes. Oh, this is wonderful.
Yes. You know,
you sew also. I can see you're smiling.
I used to sew, but even though your grandmother and my grandmother have very different stories, the memories that you're evoking of my grandmother is just delightful. I'm just sitting here with my mouth open, just saying, oh, yes, I can relate to that.
I can see it on your face.
The saving of everything, not wasting anything from water to, fat to whatever, and hard work, caring, being really showing her emotion, but it was obviously there and really caring for all of her children and grandchildren. So thank you very much.
Sure.
Yes, thank you very much. So I'm going to give you all these notes, and this is going to be a project for you because it's more than just a simple letter.
Okay.
It's essentially, I loved, I remembered, I remember, and I want to know. I mean, it's a really beautiful three-part kind of thing that you'll send to your mother, and you won't be there when she's reading it, which is good, because people need privacy to read love letters.
Okay.
And look what she'll learn about you, what your mother will learn about you, and this is starting to document your own history in your own hand. Mm-hmm. So it'll be really lovely. I'd love to know. We never send love letters for what we'll get in return, because they are simply a gift. And the gift of having remembered is a wonderful thing. The gift of wanting to know more is even a bigger compliment, I think. But if your mother responds in some way that you want to share with us so we can share with our readers, will you let us know?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you, dear.
Thank you.
Well, Janet, you brought something up. You said this Stacy's letter will not be a simple one, but for listeners who have not yet written a love letter, what's a good way to start with just a simple one?
With just a simple one, that's just take one thing that you love about somebody and that you've been thinking about and has made a difference in your life and just jot it down and send it. And a love letter can be easily 10 pages. A love letter can be half a page or less. Just so it's your truth written down in some loving, compassionate, appreciative way and sent. And for some people, it's better to send 10 a year that are shorter, depending on a person's ability to absorb a lot of emotional material and just, envelopment. Not everybody can handle that for long periods of time. So a lot of short ones is sometimes nice. Or just, I've been thinking about you and I can't tell you how much I love you. You've meant so much to me. Sign your name. I mean, that counts.
Right. Thank you.
There's definitely value in brevity.
Yes. And value in, reams.
Uh-huh. And
both.
Opus.
Yes.
Right. Well, we love to hear from our listeners. Please visit our website at www.loveletterslive.com and send us your comments. If you love this show, please let us know. We'll pass that along to Stacy.
And if you have anything you'd like to say to Stacy or share with her about similar experiences, and
if you have questions,
we'll forward it.
If you have questions for Janet, like how do I start a simple love letter, please send that along and we'll get back to you. Either Janet will email you or we'll air it here on the show. And please listen in every week to KUSF 90.3 FM at this time.
Yes.
Our past shows are on our website. If you haven't had a chance to listen to them, you can catch all of them.
And such a variety of letters.
Yes.
No such thing as a love letter of one kind.
Right. So we encourage you to put your loving sentiments into words and send them, as we say, while you still have the chance.
Mm-hmm. And although it's not too late ever to write it, you know, the person doesn't exactly get to read it if you don't do it before the person's gone. Although there's always somewhere to send it. And if you think you have to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, just remember that writing a love letter is a special occasion.
So until next week, with love from Teresa
and Janet.
Bye-bye.